Welcome to the Wealth Experience podcast series, where our subject matter experts provide the latest updates on what's happening in the world around us. Brought to you by BMO Private Wealth.
Hello, everyone. My name is Sylvain Brisebois, and I'm a Senior Vice President and National Sales Manager with BMO Private Wealth. Today, I'm joined by BMO Capital Markets Chief Investment Strategist, Brian Belsky. Brian, thank you so much for joining us again today. 2020 is unrivaled in terms of precedent. You believe it remains too soon to not count out a potential blue wave, let alone any other surprises, given the fragility of emotions and the volume of rhetoric that seems to be gripping investors. So let's dig into that for our listeners today. And I would ask the first question this way. Biden victory, along with a split Congress, would be a good thing for the market. Do you agree on that? And tell us more.
Well, thanks for having us again, Phil. And we do agree with that. Traditionally and historically, gridlock is good for the stock market and the economy. And gridlock means that in the branches of government, you have a difference in power, meaning Republican versus Democrat. In the United States, there are two sides and two ways to think. And it looks, as of right now, that we will see a President Biden in a split Congress. There's two parts of Congress. There's the House of Representatives and the Senate. House of Representatives remains Democrat, although they have lost a lot of Democrat seats. They don't have a strong majority as they did prior to the election. And the Senate, playing the odds, looks like it will remain Republican. However, there remains a wild card, which, again, going back to the term unprecedented, unrivaled, which was all about 2020. I don't know how many times as a strategist I wrote the word unprecedented down, but it was a lot. And there is not a lot of historical perspective to compare 2020 to. But and that speaks also to the election with respect to taking several days to call the election, number one. And number two, we have a situation in the state of Georgia where there's going to be a runoff for the two Senate seats there. People have to be aware that in the United States, we're a country of 50 states, and each one of the states have different laws with respect to how they elect people from all the way up from a local to a national level. And it's impacting this year, obviously, in particular, because of the runoff. So, for instance, as it stands right now, if both senators remain Republican, we will have a split government. If one of the senators remain Republican, we'll have a split government. If both senators switch to the Democratic side, we will have a potential blue wave where we have a Democratic president, a democratically controlled Senate, and a democratically controlled House. The Senate, remember, the president of the Senate is the vice president of the United States. So Kamala Harris will be the deciding vote on some things if things are tied. That's where we could see a potential blue wave with respect to the government.
Okay, very well. I'll expand on that a little bit here. So Democratic administration, if we have a split or not, a lot of clients are asking, is that friendly for the markets? Is there evidence that the markets do better under one administration or the other? And what are your views there?
Well, our views are based on objective analysis going back in history, and we go back and look at historical actual performance of all the constituents of the S&P 500 going back to 1932, and history shows that democratically led governments do better, whether or not it's a full control or a split government. I always caution people from using these historical studies because, you know, it's our belief that politics have nothing to do with the absolute performance of the stock market. It has everything to do with the economy and fundamentals. But sometimes Democrats and Republicans or different waves of power benefit from what happened before and or after. And it's all about the wave of where the economy is going. And you can go back several times through history and really point that out on an election and a year-by-year basis. So, yes, objectively, just doing the analysis, which You know, unfortunately, heading into this election, lots of emotion, lots of subjective analysis with respect to a potential blue wave versus a continued Trump presidency versus a split government with either Trump or Biden. And that's why we really caution investors still to not make any binary decisions, meaning buy or sell with respect to politics. I think the major question right now remains, what's the difference between a Biden split government and a Biden blue wave? And the bottom line has to be taxes. The President of the United States needs to have full consent of Congress to change the tax code, period. And while there are several executive orders that the president can do, and oh, by the way, presidents have been doing for several decades in terms of executive orders, really needs the full control and consent of Congress to change taxes. That can, will, and should happen if there is a blue wave. And I think the market has been playing the percentages, quite frankly, that we're not going to have a blue wave. And I think that's part and parcel why the market has been rallying with less risk on the tax side, whether or not it's corporate taxes still or individual taxes or taxes on investments, including 401ks or dividends or cap gains. We're all going to go up in a Joe Biden slash blue wave. Now, with respect to regulation, that is another issue that they need the full consent of Congress to put regulations on certain industries. There's some things from an executive order that the President of the United States can do. We can cross that road when we get to it. But I think the predominant fear with respect to putting additional emotion on the stock market was on the tax situation.
Okay, understood. Now let's turn this to the stock and maybe specific ideas. You've said in the past, at least in some of our conversations, that we're in and we're continuing to be in a stock picker's market. We need to examine companies' fundamentals. In a world where some of these companies are being a little bit shy about sharing some guidance because of uncertainty, what is your team focusing on these days? And have you switched around a little bit the way you analyze the economy?
Wonderful question. We don't analyze the economy. We let our great economics department, head up by Mr. Porter, to do that. We're investment strategists, and we invest people's real-life money, and our job is to call the path and direction of the Canadian and U.S. stock markets in terms of our research, which we've been doing for 30 years on Wall Street. And I guess, you know, I would tell you that we have not changed our process and discipline. There's always going to be macro and broader themes to look at. But quite frankly, macro and quantitative analysis for the betterment of the last 10 years has been absolutely wrong in terms of looking at the market. And many hedge funds rely on quant and macro, for instance, to make their calls on the broader market, and then they apply those on how they run their hedge fund. I'd like to remind everyone that the average hedge fund in the United States has underperformed the S&P 500 by 1,500 basis points per annum for the last 10 years. That's really troubling for a strategist that looks at everything that we possibly can in terms of building our models in our process, which center around valuation, earnings growth, operating performance from a broader perspective, but from a stock perspective on the bottoms up. Now we have to increase our wherewithal and work on things like company managements, product and services, the background of the company, the serviceable market, things that in the 80s and 90s, learning the business that I grew up with. And what was so troubling, Phil, in March, when the majority of companies pulled their guidance for the S&P 500, we, in fact, for the very first time in my investment strategy career, pulled our index level forecast for calendar year end in March for both the TSX and the S&P 500, citing that we changed to a rolling 12 months, meaning that with the majority of companies, both in Canada and the United States, pulling their guidance, how can us in good nature provide a guidance? And so we moved more to a longer term 12 month forecast. And then in August, we updated our forecast and reinstated our forecast as more companies were slowly kind of beginning to give guidance. It's clearly not the where it should. And so right now, as it stands, we were at 3,400 for year end. In August, we moved to a 3,650 year end target and 3,850 12-month target for the S&P 500. And for Canada, 18,200, we reinstated that and then shifted to an 18,700 target for the TSX over the next 12 months.
Okay, and for the listeners out there, as we record this, the S&P 500 is at 3560 and change. You've just mentioned your target of 3650. We're getting pretty close. Would you expect to be as precise as that in the environment that we're in? Your fundamentals are guiding you to these numbers as you have in the past.
I sure hope so. And we've been very fortunate to be accurate in the past because we stick with our process and discipline. Got a lot of questions over the last few days if I'm going to change my number between now and year end. And I just don't think that adds a lot of value given the fact that we have 6 or 7 weeks left of trading. The trends are what the trends are. It doesn't mean we can't have a pullback, as you know, and hopefully the listeners know that we don't make short-term calls. I think some people out there like to make these 10% calls to the downside. Much of that is based on their need to make the call, number one. But number two, still, because they missed this move, quite frankly, and they want to create some buzz. We don't operate like that. We stick with our analysis, and we try to be objective. The bottom line is that we still believe that U.S. stocks are in a big, giant 20-year bull market, the second half of which was reignited in March following the one-month cyclical bear market. And as I said in March, and as I've tried to reinstall the last several months, is that the second half of the bull market will be led by differing type strategies, meaning, again, stock picking, fundamentals, bottom-up portfolio construction, much more disciplined. And quite frankly, the last week or so, with the market trying to play this stay-at-home theme versus the cyclical theme, let's make a growth call, let's make a value call, the market to us remains not very disciplined and excessively binary. And life isn't like that. Life is not a on and off switch. Life is not yes or no or green or red. And I think that really speaks to still the fragility of the market and really the lack of patience and process, really kind of chasing whatever's happening that day. And so we would continue to think, we continue to advise that the stock market is a market of stocks, and you can have a cyclical portion of your portfolio, a structural growth portion of your portfolio, and secular growth portion of your portfolio. And that would really diffuse a lot of the noise and a lot of the volatility that we've seen in the last week in particular.
So interesting when you put it that way. The average advisor and the average investor will speak about having a high level of cash on the sidelines, as we sometimes say. Yields are close to zero. How do you see that unplaying? When will investors jump into the market as they had before the pandemic?
Well, the Federal Reserve is signaling that we are going to be maintaining this interest rate policy at or near zero for at least the next 3 years. Bank of Canada is also signaling that. That follows through again with our great economics team is saying that we could not see a change in monetary policy from either central bank until 2024. So what does that mean for portfolios? It just means that the risk premium that you are applying to equities is going to remain elevated, and the risk-free rate at zero, you have to look for other areas for yield. What is amazing to me, Phil, was that as of right now, as we tape this, 10-year treasuries have outperformed stocks this year. We've seen a massive inflow of fixed income vehicles for the last 12 years. It still remains a risk-averse type crowd. And with the buildup in cash and with still more outflows than inflows into equities, believe it or not, the last 10 years, I still believe that the majority of investors around the world are underinvested in equities, which provides it a fantastic opportunity. From a yield perspective, I think it's going to be tough to buy higher yield equities, but instead this notion of equity income growth, which the Canadian market is just wonderful at doing given the lineage with the UK. Canadian companies are much more adept and comfortable with this notion of paying dividends It's not about yield, as we've tried to tell people in the portfolios that we run for Canada and the United States. It's not about the actual level of yield. It's about how you grow that dividend over time. And I think that's going to become a very, very important part of asset allocation going forward with respect to equity income growth in both Canada and the United States.
Okay, fantastic. And one last question. I'm going to ask this one with a little bit of a smile because I know you won't be able to share it, share the answer fully, but you're working, I presume you're working on your 2021 outlook. To our listeners today, can you share a little bit some of the themes that we might expect to read about when that report does come out?
And I'm smiling as well because I'll try to do a good job of tap dancing around this. So I went back through my records, and I believe this is my 23rd or 24th year-ahead piece that I've principally authored. And this year, we're going to really stick to high-level index forecasts and the sectors, because at the end of the day, we want to make sure that our story in terms of discipline and process on how to invest in both Canada and the United States are in place. So that's what's going to be coming out first, hopefully in the next week to 10 days, and then a couple other supplemental reports after that. I think it's going to be typical quote-unquote bell scheme, meaning stay disciplined, really focus on stocks. Much of what you heard in the podcast already similar, but I do think there's going to be still this call for calm and to not believe the rhetoric and really stick within your discipline, whatever your discipline is. If it's just Canadian stocks, then stick with why Canada's been working. It's not just about gold. It's really about how Canada continues to be excessively correlated to the United States in terms of earnings and GDP. And with the political situation potentially becoming a little bit more civil in the world, that could be good for Canada and United States relations. With respect to the U.S., we still think the U.S. or still know the U.S. is the world's largest GDP. We still know that the U.S. GDP is controlled by the consumer. Over 70% of our growth as an economy is the consumer. As we kind of go back and forth in terms of really the common sense approach to what the vaccine means for all of us from a societal basis, from a professional basis, society in professional world intertwined this year like no other year in history. And that's why the mobile society / stay-at-home stocks did so well. That's why we reacted so much with excitement and emotion that we have a vaccine. And, oh, by the way, we're going to have additional therapeutics and additional vaccines. Now it's all about timing and how we implement those. But that doesn't necessarily mean green means go to a lot of the value stocks and cyclical stocks. Again, this is about process. It's about discipline. It's about diversification. And it's about longer-term investing, not just a week or two. So that's kind of the preamble in terms of what you're going to hear from my 2021 outlook. And we're blessed and fortunate to be able to send that out to all of our clients.
That's fantastic. Well, your work in the past has been incredibly precise, and so I think you're wise, and we're happy that you're not changing the process too much. Brian, as always, this has been a fascinating conversation. I wish we had more time to dig in a little bit deeper into what this all means for our clients' portfolios, but on behalf of our listeners and our wealth professionals, thank you so much for your time today. We always value the perspective and, above all, the work that you do to help us make better-informed decisions. And to our clients, please keep in mind that you can reach out to your wealth professionals at any time, and they're happy to provide an expert opinion on the state of affairs. Take care of yourselves, be well, and until next time, thank you so much for listening. Thank you again, Brian, and have a great day to everybody.
This podcast series has been brought to you by BMO Private Wealth. Please join us again.